You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 820 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and you're joining us live in Chicago at 9 o'clock a.m. on AM 820, the Catholic Community of Faith. And it's a program where in the next hour we're going to be spending some time talking about some of the public policy issues facing the citizens of our state. And we do so from a Catholic perspective, kind of a unique thing that occurs here in the Chicagoland area. And we're very grateful to Relevant Radio and to the Archdiocese for giving us this radio time. We're going to talk a little bit today about the state budget or lack thereof, and really probably try to make a more encompassing conversation regarding the state budget. And we want to talk not only about the budget itself, but more or less the state's fiscal conditions. And in about a couple of minutes, we'll be joined by Tom Johnson, who is from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. And during the last program, you may recall that we did on these very same airwaves back in the month of August, we talked about the state budget, and we had a guest on from the Center for Budget and Tax Policy Group. And we talked about the state condition, the condition at the time, and it was my desire at the conclusion of the show back in late August that we would be concluding the budget session soon in Springfield. But as many of you probably know by following the local media and the press, that unfortunately that is not the case, and the situation in Springfield is not one that we should be proud of as citizens of the state of Illinois, and it continues to drag on to this day, with the policymakers that we have elected being unable to date to make some key public policy decisions. And with us later on, we'll have Tom Johnson from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois to discuss those and many other issues facing our state. Before we get to that at 10 after, and we want to have your input on your opinion about what our policymakers are doing or not doing down in Springfield representing our interests, we want to talk a little bit about the endeavors of the Catholic Conference during this budget negotiations. The state of Illinois does have a budget that has been implemented to a degree, but as many of you read and heard back in late August, Governor Blagojevich exercised his authority by amendatorily vetoing some of those line items that were passed in the state budget, and he did so standing with Senate President Emil Jones, which has resulted in some of the stalemate that's been going on in Springfield. Normally, we probably wouldn't have a direct interest in that negotiation, but unfortunately, as many of you hopefully know by now, the Catholic Conference, along with many other advocacy organizations, was successful in persuading some members of the General Assembly to include some funding for our schools in that state budget. There was a $10 million appropriation that was included in the state budget that was passed that would have funded safety, school safety needs in the Catholic school system, along with a $14 million appropriation that went to provide assistance for transportation needs of those sending their children to non-public schools. And in addition, there was a $14 million appropriation for school textbooks. The governor, unfortunately, mandatorily vetoed two of those items that I just discussed. One of them was the school safety grant, which was about a $10 million reduction, and the other was $14 million reduction for the transportation money. So, unfortunately, we're left with a situation now where we are part of the effort to override the governor's amendatory vetoes. And as you probably have been reading in the paper, that is somewhat stalled at the present time. The House has made a motion to override those vetoes, and now the Senate, it's up to them, and the ball is, if you will, in their court as to what they're going to do with overriding the governor's actions. We were in Springfield last week, advocating on behalf of those line items, and to date, we really don't have any indication of what the Senate will do. We are relatively optimistic, but on the other hand, the information to date indicates that there may not be much support for overriding too many of the governor's vetoes. You may recall, and Tom will talk about this when he joins us at 10 after, that during the budget negotiations, the governor amendatorily vetoed about $400 million to $500 million in that budget in order to fund what he wanted to do for health care expenditure related spending. He has been very publicly committed to trying to spend more additional state money for financing health care that he sees as his number one priority. And what he did is he mandatorily vetoed the budget in order to fund those programs. So we have a bit of a stalemate going on in Springfield, and as you've all been reading, in addition to that issue of the budget, we are now in the month of October, proceeding quickly into a time when, in a normal year, the actions and the work for the General Assembly would have been long concluded. We are still in the middle of debating these issues almost into the next fiscal year. And that's what we wanted to talk about with our guest who will be joining us at 10 after, who is, as I mentioned, Tom Johnson from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. You've probably read in the newspapers a lot of information about the CTA. What's going on with funding the CTA, that public policy need. You've probably been also reading about the property tax cap. That's been a major public policy issue that looks like it could be on its way to being decided, and some of those other issues that are facing the taxpayers and the citizens of the state of Illinois. We are going to be joined by, like I said, Tom Johnson at 10 after the hour here on the Catholic Community of Faith, AM 820. And if you will, I think right now we'll take a quick break, and so we can put Tom on the line and talk a little bit about the Illinois state budget, what the state's fiscal condition is, where we receive our revenues in terms of tax dollars, and where they get spent. So we want to hear your opinion and your voice, so please join us at the appropriate time. After Mr. Johnson joins us, the number is 312-751-1979, and please stay with us, and we'll be right back after this brief message.
The Catholic Campaign for Human Development helps fund organizations that break the cycle of poverty and make Chicagoland a better place to live.
Our organization conducted a summer academic camp on Chicago's South Side to keep kids safe, off the streets, and help them succeed in school.
Thanks to our efforts, the EPA is cleaning up industrial pollution that is threatening residents in scores of homes in Little Village.
We have been fighting to keep a well-respected nursing home open in Lake County.
We teach homeless women a useful craft, pay them a living wage, and offer them transitional housing if needed.
Those are just a few examples of the wonderful work being done by the more than 20 local organizations funded by the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Please support the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Let's break the cycle of poverty and make Chicago and the suburbs a better place to live.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the 3 R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and we're talking about some public policy issues that affect all of the citizens of our state. And we're lucky enough to be joined this morning by a gentleman by the name of Tom Johnson, who is with the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. And I think it's interesting that although what can somewhat seem as maybe a perhaps could be a not very interesting or dull topic in terms of finances and accounting, I think the budget in and of itself is something that Catholics in particular and all people of goodwill should be particularly concerned about, because it does reflect our values. In a way, one could argue that it is a moral document. What we spend our money on is a reflection of our priorities and our values. And I think it was Eleanor Roosevelt once said, if you want to know what somebody's policy, somebody's priorities are, take a look at their checkbook and what are they spending their money on? What are their priorities and what are their values? And with that, we're lucky enough this morning to be talking with Tom Johnson from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. Tom, are you on the line?
I am, Bob.
Tom, welcome. Thanks so much for taking some time to join us. I know it was a little difficult for you. I believe you're out of town and on the road, and we really appreciate your being able to spend a couple minutes with us here this morning.
That'll be great, Bob.
Great. By way of just introduction, the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois, Tom has had a long experience in terms of his involvement with public policy issues surrounding taxes from both, I would say, the local, the state, and the federal viewpoint. He has been, he is a former director of the Department of Revenue back in the 80s, spent some time with some of the major accounting firms at KPMG, and I think it was Grant Thornton as well. And he has a very good background in terms of not only taxation, but also the public policy aspect of taxation, as we know it. And the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois has been very involved with monitoring the current budget situation and the overall fiscal condition of our state. Tom, maybe we should just really start out by real simply, perhaps you can explain, as I was saying, I think the budget in many ways can be a reflection of a values document. It is a moral document. And maybe you can just describe a little bit about where we collect our funding from in terms of the state. Where does the state gather its funds from in terms of the major sources of taxes and fees and that sort of thing? And what are the major expenditures? And maybe we can start our conversation that way.
Very good, Bob. Whenever I make a presentation on this subject matter, I like to try to break state government or how state government raises its funds and spends it into three different areas. First of all, transportation. And I put that aside because historically in our state, we have imposed different fees, whether it be car registration fees and, mm-hmm. and individual license plate license fees, as well as motor fuel taxes, into a separate budget for transportation purposes. And that's historically been dedicated to use those funds in that way. So they're really not available for other government purposes. So I put them aside for a minute, shall we say, to get to really understand where our general priorities are. The other area of revenue that I put aside is federal funds. And that represents a significant amount. I'll get to that in a minute. But those federal funds come to state government mm-hmm. and must be spent in the specific way authorized by the federal government. So there's really no flexibility, mm-hmm. shall we say, available to state policymakers as to how those funds are raised. It does impact how we spend some of our own money, because some of those dollars are matching dollars, and I'll get to that in a moment mm-hmm. as well. So if we put those two items aside, we're talking about a $30 billion budget. $30 billion of our own source revenue is raised and then spent for various different purposes. And where does that $30 billion come from? About one-third from the income tax, one-third from the sales tax, and then the rest comes from various sources, whether it be business income taxes, cigarette taxes, liquor taxes, and things of the public utility taxes and things of those nature, that nature.
Mm-hmm.
The important aspect of that breakdown, one-third, one-third, and approximately one-third, is about 77% of our revenue stream, personal income tax, sales tax, and business income and related capital taxes, represents about 77% of the total, and it has growth potential. It is the only area of our revenue sources that have growth potential. 23% of our revenues, public utility taxes, cigarette taxes, do not grow from year to year. That's a very important aspect of our revenue structure. How much of it has a growth potential because of natural economic growth or inflation, and how much of it doesn't grow from year to year. Because on the other side of the budget is our spending priorities. And those spending priorities tend to grow with inflation or demographic changes year after year after year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our great concerns is a balanced fiscal plan must have a revenue system that is balanced with the spending of state government. And that's always been a challenge in our state, more so than other states.
Yeah, and it seems, based on what you're telling me, is that if 77% of the total of the $30 billion is potentially growth in it, well, 30-something percent is not.
That's right.
And I would imagine on the other side of the ledger, the spending side, is 100% growth potential,
yep,
as opposed to the revenue side, which creates sort of an inherent problem to begin with.
Right, right. Now, getting back to the revenue side,
mm-hmm,
of that 77%, we expect it to normally grow year after year at about a 4% rate. When you balance that with the remainder that doesn't have growth potential of any magnitude at all, you get an overall state revenue growth rate of about 3%. Current spending pressures grow for the next 2 to 4 years, we project we'll have a growth rate of potentially 7.5%. So when your revenue only grows at 3%, but your spending pressures grow at 78%, you do not have a balanced fiscal plan.
And the obvious question that we'll get to in a second is what happens when you have such a situation. I think one of the things, Tom, that many of our listeners probably are aware of is the governor's very vocal opposition to using one of those natural growth potentials, which is the sales tax increase. That is something that our state does have a bit of discretion about. And also, I think most people realize that at a 3% flat tax in terms of our Illinois' obligation,
mm-hmm,
some people have think that is pretty low anyway. So you have the income tax, the sales tax, which I believe he's taken pretty much off the table, which also begs the question, if you take those two major potential sources off the table, what else do you have?
Well, as I said before, those two major sources are the growth sources.
Sure.
And natural growth, what we call natural growth. And the others have no growth potential at all because they tend to be consumption-based. And unless consumption increases, the tax revenue generated from those taxes do not increase. So what it ends up happening is that if there is a significant demand for new spending, and obviously, mm-hmm, from our perspective, it appears that there is,
sure,
then it has to come from some brand new source, or to put a significant increase in those sources through rates or whatever, or tax-based expansion on those revenue sources that tend not to have much growth potential in it. The problem with that is if you increase the rate and then from that point forward there's no growth potential, but yet you've integrated a new program that has significant growth in the spending expectation from it, it's, again, an unbalanced fiscal plan and one that won't work over any period of time.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the state budget and our fiscal situation right now with Tom Johnson of the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. And if you want to join our conversation, if you have questions for Tom or myself in terms of what revenue sources are out there and what are being tapped to pay for the increasing demands, or if you have questions or comments about what we are spending our money on, you are more than welcome to join us, and the phone number is 312-751-1979. And I should add that we're going to continue our conversation after this break, and we're joined with Tom Johnson of the Taxpayers Federation. And this is something in terms of we all pay taxes, whether you may think that because you have certain deductions or eliminations, we all pay fees, we all are taxed in terms of what we buy. So the sales tax, the income tax is something that is of concern to everybody. And we want to continue our conversation after this break at 312-751-1979. This is Bob Gilligan. I'll be right back after this brief message.
You're invited to watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Here's host Graziano Marcheschi.
The Archdiocese of Chicago's Catholic school system educates almost 100,000 students each year. The attendance rate for these students is a very healthy 97%. 94% of Catholic high school graduates go on to college. The 217 elementary and 39 high schools in Cook and Lake counties make up one of the largest Catholic school systems, not just in the nation, but in the world. We'll talk to a few of the people on the front lines of our wonderful Catholic school systems.
For several interesting stories about the Archdiocese, please watch The Church, the Cardinal, and You this weekend on cable television. Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Radio TV for the time and cable channel in your area. That's www.archchicago.org. The Church, the Cardinal, and You, compelling television about your Archdiocese.
Hi, I'm Chuck Knapp. Join me for Searching the Word, a live interactive program that equips you with a firm understanding of the faith. Each day, we'll search the Bible, the Catechism, papal teaching, and historical writings for answers to questions about living Catholic life. That's Searching the Word every weekday on Relevant Radio.
That's Searching the Word with Chuck Neff, weekdays at noon on Chicagoland's Relevant Radio, 820 AM.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. Cardinal George says, "It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries willing to help you during times of loss. Call 708-449-6100 for assistance. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
Welcome back to our conversation. This is Bob Gilligan. I'm joined this morning with Tom Johnson with the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. We're talking about public policy issues, and we're talking about a public policy issue that concerns us all, which is taxes, how much we pay, where we pay it, and where the money goes. Tom, before the break, we were talking about the revenue and expense, sort of the inherent problem, and I think I was saying that that leads to deficit, I would think. So talk a little bit about what happens now that our revenues are not keeping paces with our desire to spend, which is probably something a lot of individuals out there can relate to. And what's going on? Is the deficit growing? Is it shrinking? Is it become particularly more acute under the Blagojevich administration and past administrations? But where have we been and where are we going in terms of this issue?
Well, we have obviously been overspending for several years because our spending appetite has been greater than our revenue production has permitted. Now, how do we fund that? People think, well, how can that be? Well, what we do is we defer obligations. And at the current level, we're deferring about 15% of our budget each year into future years. And how do we defer those? And what are the types of deferrals we make? Three basic areas. Pension obligations. We have one of the worst funded pension programs of any state in the nation. And the reason we have that is we have not been making contributions to those pension funds to the level that would be required in order to have it fully funded. We have about assets set aside equal to liabilities of only about 60%. Some of our sister states and so forth have pension funding programs that are overfunded, 105%. That's one way. Another way is we have not set aside any assets to pay for retiree health care benefits, although we've promised those benefits to our state employees. We have not set any assets aside to pay for those benefits when those employees retire. And the third program that we've tended to do over the years to borrow from, shall we say, is to delay the reimbursements to health care providers. And that cycle of delayed payments have gotten all the way up to 6 months to, in some cases, 9 months from the date of service before we actually make payment. And that's an effective way of borrowing. It's kind of putting it all on the credit card and hoping in the future there'll be enough money to pay those bills. But we've become accustomed in this state of putting a lot of obligations on future taxpayers through deferring payment of those obligations.
I know in terms of our work representing the healthcare and some of the Catholic hospitals, that is always a big issue in terms of delayed payments for Medicaid, and I think that's the third one you mentioned to talk about. We have a caller on the line, Chris, from, I believe it's somewhere in the western suburbs. You have a comment or a question. Chris, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to ask, what is the cost factor and how would our budget be without giving any benefits to illegals of any kind?
Hmm. I don't have those numbers.
But what would our budget be in much better shape?
Certainly if you cut benefits to any sector across the country.
The what?
If you cut benefits or did not allow benefits to be allowed for any sector, whether it be the aged or whether it be illegals or what.
Well, illegals are not citizens of this country.
Yes.
That's what I mean.
But they also pay taxes.
Well, they reap much more than what they pay.
I don't know.
If they pay taxes.
I do not know that information.
Well, wouldn't you think that our budget, our health care and our schooling, so many new schools are going up. Well, so many people have had abortions. I've even asked, who are these children that are going to be going to these new schools? And they're bigger schools, And I wonder, where are they coming from?
I think
our state is growing, and it has been growing, and it's projected to continue to grow, primarily in the metropolitan area. But just to give a perspective as to where the money goes, about 30% of that $30 billion is spent on education,
mm-hmm.
Elementary and secondary, including higher education. Another 15% of the money is shared with local governments to be spent at the local government level, whether it be counties or townships or cities. Another, 40% of the total budget is spent on health care. And it's interesting to know where that health care gets spent. The most expensive cost of health care, to be honest with you, is for the aging population.
Yeah.
Even though they represent a smaller percentage of Medicaid recipients, they represent about 30% of Medicaid recipients. Developmentally disabled and the elderly take up about 70% of the spending. So it's health care, education are the primary sources, and then other human services is another 15%.
Chris, thanks for the phone call. I think one of that's sort of a tangential topic, but I think you bring up an interesting point. And I've read studies, and I'm sure, Tom, you've seen too, of drawing different conclusions in terms of the undocumented. And I think what you had indicated, they do contribute to payroll taxes and some other forms of revenue. The question is how much do they draw from the system in terms of providing education and health care, as Chris was alluding to. And I've seen different studies conclude different things. I'm not sure if it's decided yet in terms of what that conclusion is. I'm not an expert on that, but it seems like you had the same opinion.
Yeah, they certainly anyone that's a resident of this state, whether they're legal or illegal, pay sales tax, pay income taxes,
right,
to the extent they're employed. And so it's a very difficult evaluation to...
Exactly. And another tangential topic that you just brought up in your description of where the money is being spent in terms of health care, local government, education is I have read, and I can't recall the statistics off the top of my head, but the dollar figure of expenditures in Medicaid and especially under health care for the aging at the end of life is extraordinary. And it seems where that's where a significant amount, a significant number of dollars go towards that health care expenditure. I mean, it's just one of those facts of life, I suppose, that towards the end of life, you spend a lot of money trying to do what we can to keep people healthy.
Right.
And once again, I think Tom's purpose in being here today is not to make sort of a quantitative or analysis of those issues, but to give us a feel in terms of what is in terms of the overall budget, what is being raised, how we're raising our revenues in terms of taxation, and how on a macro level we're spending those dollars. But we welcome the phone calls, Chris. Thanks for making that contribution, and we're looking for other phone callers as well. If you have an opinion about the state revenue picture in terms of where we are in Springfield. The number, once again, is 312-751-1979. And, Tom, I'm told we're going to take another brief message here. We'll be back after the break talking with Tom Johnson from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. If you have any comments or questions or suggestions about the fiscal condition of the state, or perhaps the concern about the fiscal condition of the state, feel free to give us a call at 312-751-1979. We'll be back with Tom Johnson right after this brief message.
Over America, what have you done for your marriage today?
Boy, I gave a huge hug this morning, like a really big squeeze that lasted forever. Great kiss. Those things are really important.
She got a really short haircut that she hated, and I wrote her a note and put it up on the mirror saying that she was a cute girl with cute hair.
What have I done for my marriage today?
We've actually organized a date night tonight.
What have I done for my marriage today?
Wow, that is a great question.
I took the baby while she worked.
I got up with the baby while he slept.
Yeah.
Today, I sent an email to my husband, and I said, "You rock."
Well, I've done today what I usually do, and that is obey.
I listened to my wife when we talked on the telephone today. She really likes it when I listen.
What have you done for your marriage today? Little things can make a big difference. For ideas, go to foryourmarriage.org. A message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
Celebrate our Catholic faith in the land down under. Pope Benedict XVI is calling young people from around the world to join him in July 2008 for World Youth Day in Sydney, Australia.
This vibrant celebration features popular Catholic musicians, catechesis by our bishops, including our own Cardinal Francis George, and an overnight vigil mass with the Pope.
Call the Office for Catechesis and Youth Ministry for details on this once-in-a-lifetime spiritual journey.
The number is 773-388-8674. That number again, 773-388-8674. Join 1 million young Catholics in this global expression of Catholic faith.
Hope to see you in Sydney next July.
You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio, 820 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio, 820 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 9:32 in the morning here in Chicago. It's an overcast, very typical fall day. Very typical day after a Bears defeat, and our producer was at the game, and he's still in tears. He can't quite get over it. We're joined with Tom Johnson talking about the tax issues, etc. Tom, we have another phone caller on the line. Before we get to the caller, I want to just maybe you can make a comment about you mentioned one of the drivers in terms of the budget is education, local government, and healthcare. Local government is an interesting one because I think one could argue in terms of efficiency and provision of services in the state of Illinois, that local government, there are a number of local governments. I know my parents live out in the western suburbs in Wheaton, and there's not only the city, there's the township, there's the park district, there's the library district. It seems like there's just a number of different local forms of government. And I wonder, in terms of efficiency in Illinois, is if that's something that I know that's a hot topic politically and probably not going to be addressed, but in terms of how we're spending our public dollars, is that a problem unique to Illinois, or are we just like most other major Midwest industrial states?
No, Illinois is a unique state, obviously in many ways, and one of them is the number of units of local government we have to serve our people versus other states. We have over 7,000 units of local government in the state. I think the next most government-populated state in the nation is Pennsylvania, and they've got somewhere around 60% of that, about 4,200. One of our concerns as a result of that number of units of local government is a priority setting that necessarily takes place.
Yeah.
Certainly all of them are mostly dependent upon the property tax. And by the way, in comparison to our own source revenues for state purposes, that $30 billion I talked about earlier, local governments raise about $22 billion in property tax alone, more than what is generated from both the income tax and the sales tax for state purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And that $22 billion is spent by all kinds of different units of local government. School districts are the primary unit of local government that is the primary source of that property tax bill, but you do have the counties, the townships, the park districts, and so forth. What you find in many other states is rather than have a multiple number of units of local government, many of those local government functions are consolidated into either county government or
yeah.
city government. And as a result of the dispersion, shall we say, of responsibility in our state, the question becomes of the limited resources available,
mm-hmm.
how are those priorities set? And when each unit of local government has a different function, sometimes those the priorities between what functions of each one of those types of governments is more important to be funded at any point in time is a difficult choice to make.
Absolutely. And how do you say, unraveling that is probably even more difficult. And I think that's something that there's a lot of politics that goes on with
yeah.
that. And but that's another topic for another show.
But it does take a lot of tax support,
sure.
primarily from the property tax. But in addition to that $22 billion of property taxes, the state does transfer, and this is not including the school funding formula, transfers about $4.5 billion back to the U.S. units of local government out of the state source revenues to help fund those governmental units as well.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I think we have another phone caller on the line here, I believe. I think it's John from Chicago. John, are you on the air?
Yes.
John, welcome.
Thank you. I just had the question.
Sure.
We hear sometimes there should be a separation of church and state. And if there are issues that you know that people can't do that, but sometimes it seems like the state steps in and invades the church's domain.
Mm-hmm.
For example, on immoral issues that should be left decided to the people of faith. Now, I'm talking about research in human embryonic stem cells, where they're actually destroying these human embryos. For what they hope would be medical research, which hasn't panned out yet. But my question is, even though the legislature has said that we're not going to do this,
mm-hmm.
the governor stepped in and somehow took $1 billion out on his own to advance this research, which seems to be immoral. So, number one, how can he do that if people don't want it done?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, where is he getting the money to do this? And thirdly, is there a way to stop that?
Mm. Tom, do you want to go first? Do you want me to go?
Yeah. first of all, I think the amount that I recollect was the amount that was dedicated. That was not $1 billion, but $10 million.
Right.
And obviously, in the state budget, it's a huge document. And there are dollars appropriated for various types of research that may not get defined as closely as some people would suggest, and therefore it gives the agencies of government the authority to spend in not identified ways. So I don't know the entire history behind that that use of funds. I do know, I think it's around $10 million, and maybe, Bob, you have a little more perspective on how that came about.
John brings up an excellent point, and I think, Tom, this is probably where your interest and our interest intersect. In terms of good government, funding the executive and the legislative branch relationship, I think most people would agree this was an egregious violation of that. And Tom, you're right. Actually, there were two times when the governor did that. The first time, John is incorrect, it was $10 million that was funded to do experimentation on stem cell research, both adult and embryonic. And then he did it again a second year. He used $5 million from this is where I think most people who are not familiar with the process, and even those who are familiar with the process, kind of scratch their head and just shrug their shoulders. And what he did in the second year was he used unexpended money in the kid care line item to fund that venture, the $5 million. And then the first year, I have to admit, I'm kind of drawing a blank on where he came up with the money. I'll probably think of it in a couple minutes. But yeah, he did. He wound up using his executive authority to move money in the budget in order to fund something that the legislature did not. And I think the thing that John and many people who follow this issue are particularly upset about is it's not like this issue wasn't discussed in the General Assembly. It was discussed over and over and over again. And many legislators who are responsible for the budget had said publicly that there is no money in the budget for stem cell research, period. It happened many times. And unfortunately, once the legislature concluded, time went by. The first time, I think it was in July, that the announcement was made where he put that money in. And the second time, I think it was the subsequent July, where the same thing happened. I think most people who are familiar with the legislative process said, well, how can that be? And to this day, nobody has a good answer. It's one of those things that he used as executive prerogative and was not sufficiently challenged on it, so he got away with it. But I think what John brings up is the question of, I think what you were trying to say earlier is, you know, we raise X number of dollars in terms of revenues, and I think your organization would say, well, therefore, we can spend only that amount of money. Right. We can't spend more than we take in, and if we do, we have to cut or we have to raise.
Right.
And I think that's what John was saying is there's moral objections to what the governor did, but there's also very significant procedural, if you will, for lack of a better explanation, and good government reasons to object to what the governor did on that issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other things is, as you probably noted this year, the governor had proposed a significant expansion of health care.
Oh, yeah.
A universal health care program for the state. The General Assembly did not approve the revenue sources or the appropriations to provide to expand mm-hmm. that health care program. But then the governor did veto a significant amount of those dollars that were appropriated by the General Assembly for other purposes, and he says he's going to dedicate those dollars to the new health program initiative. Now, that's going to be certainly undoubtedly litigated. How can an expenditure be made when it was not specifically appropriated. And it is a very tense issue in Springfield over the budget negotiations.
It is.
The division of power between the General Assembly and the executive branch. We'll see how that develops over the next several months.
We certainly will, and I think we're embarking on a whole new era in terms of a very active executive when it comes to these sort of decisions, and the response of the General Assembly is being made evident as well with their objections to some of this. We have to take another quick break. Thanks for the phone call, John. By the way, I don't know if I thanked you, but if I didn't, thank you. That is an important contribution to the discussion today, not only from the moral perspective, but also from a good government funding issue as well. It is 9:42 in Chicago, and we would like to hear from you as well. If you're out there, if you have a question about the state budget, how we raise funds and how we spend them, if you have comments or concerns, the number, if you want to join our conversation, is area code 312-751-1979. We're talking with Tom Johnson of the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. We'll be right back after this brief message. Stay with us.
The Chastity Education Initiative reaches more than 20,000 teens and college students each year. Join us on Saturday, November 3rd for the Educating Minds, Inspiring Hearts Benefit Dinner to support the Chastity Education Initiative, one of the finest chastity education programs in the nation. The event will feature Cardinal George, MC Sheila Logmanis, and keynote speaker Chris Godfrey, a former professional football player and Super Bowl champion. Because of programs like the Chastity Chastity Education Initiative, the teen virginity rate has significantly increased for the past decade. However, this success cannot be sustained without your support. Join us on Saturday, November 3rd at the Midwest Conference Center in Northlake, Illinois. For reservations or more information, log on to www.archchicago.org or call the Respect Life office at 312-751-5355. Transform teens' hearts. Transform the world.
Welcome to Mission Chicago 2007 as we celebrate the theme of spirituality. Evening missions are taking place throughout the Archdiocese in both English and Spanish. Spirituality themes include the meaning of being created in the image and likeness of God, exploring our potential for growth in Christ, and the spirituality of African-American music and song. These are single evening missions, and there is no cost. Find out when and where by going to www.missionchicago.net. That's www.missionchicago.net. It's Mission Chicago 2007, the year of spirituality. Accept this mission. The rewards are everlasting.
Do you know what's going on in your church around the corner or around the world? Do you want to hear stories about your faith? Do you want to help shape Catholic thought? If you said yes, subscribe to the Catholic New World, the newspaper for the people of the Archdiocese of Chicago. Call 312-655-7777 or visit us at catholicnewworld.com. The Catholic New World, a world beyond your church, a church beyond your world.
Welcome back to our conversation. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, talking about some of the issues pending in Springfield at the state government level. And this morning we're lucky enough and grateful enough to have with us Tom Johnson from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois, talk a little bit about what's going on in Springfield with the budget and financing of our obligations in terms of what we revenues that we take in and how that money gets spent. Tom, did one of the big issues going into the session was, I think it was Senate Bill or House Bill 750, which was a measure that would have swapped, if you will, and I'm not sure if it was quite exactly a swap, but it would have reduced the over-reliance on the property tax and increased, I believe it was the state sales tax, and some of that money would have been used to fund public education, which, as you indicated earlier, is a major driver in terms of what takes up our resources. Did the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois take a position on that legislation, and if so, what was it?
We did. We had some. We registered some concerns about it. First of all, on the issue of the property tax swap, we have to put things in context. What House Bill 750 did was provide property tax relief of about $2.7 billion, which represents about 12% of the property tax burden today. The concern we had is that the expectation on the part of the people is that it would have provided a lot more benefit than that, and that it would be difficult to really raise the revenue necessary in order to give significant relief. If you're talking about relief in the tune of about 25% of the tax burden, you're talking about somewhere around $6 billion. That's quite a bit more than the that which was proposed in 750.
Sure.
We also wanted to be sure that the if we did raise significant amount of money for education, that it be allocated in a way to assure that the student achievement levels would be significantly enhanced, and if they were not enhanced, that in fact there would be some provision to say that funding would not continue, because obviously if we're going to ask the taxpayers for significantly additional dollars for funding education, then we should definitely have a program in place that assures us that the quality of education will be improved as well. And we're not quite satisfied yet that all those pieces are in place for the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois to propose any significant support for the program. Although we're quite interested in getting a fiscal plan put in place in the state that balances our revenue system with our spending system. If we are going to spend the money, we are totally opposed to this continual deferring of obligations to future generations. If we're going to have this much government, then the taxpayers that are currently receiving the benefit of that much government should be the ones paying the tax bills to support it. And if we can't get the public support for that, mm-hmm. then we should identify ways to contain the cost of government in a way that would put a balanced system back in place.
I sure heard that sentiment expressed by many members of the State House in terms of, I think the sentiment, if I could express it, was they were not necessarily opposed to it, but I think a lot of in state representatives in particular were concerned that the money being spent was not going to produce a certain result in terms of education spending, and that, I think, gave people a lot of concern in terms of supporting it. I think if the expectation could have been more clearly delineated in terms of what we were buying, perhaps that could have passed, but I think that was a major issue. And I think the other subtext to that whole conversation was just the overall lack of belief that one tax was going to go down and the other one would take care of it. I think people are skeptical.
Well, I understand that, and we were certainly concerned as well, because the perception was there was going to be a 25% reduction. Well, $2.7 billion, which was what was going to be dedicated to property tax relief, only represents about 12% of the tax base.
Sure.
And, in fact, you got to think about it. The property tax grows at about 4 or 5% a year. That's about $1.1 billion every year of new property tax burden that's created. And so, in our opinion, the relief that would have been provided under that bill would vanish in about 3 years, and the tax property tax bills would be back increasing over the...
Right where we were. Right, exactly. We have to take another quick break to join the final 10 minutes of our conversation here, talking to Tom Johnson about the state budget and some of the issues, and we want to wrap up our conversation in about 10 minutes here. If you have the inkling, we have a couple more minutes. The number is 312-751-1979. We'll be back after this brief message.
The Catholic Campaign for Human Development helps fund organizations that break the cycle of poverty.
Our organization conducted a summer academic camp on Chicago's South Side to keep kids safe and help them succeed in school.
We teach homeless women a useful craft and pay them a living wage.
We have been fighting to keep a well-respected nursing home open in Lake County.
Please support the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, break the cycle of poverty, and make Chicago and the suburbs a better place to live.
We asked people all over America, what have you done for your marriage today?
It's a good question.
I gave a huge hug this morning.
We've actually organized a date night tonight.
I took the baby while she worked.
I sent my husband a love email.
I have carried my wife's purse.
I shopped.
We talked.
I made my wife laugh. She's still laughing.
What have you done for your marriage today? Do something a little special. Get started at foryourmarriage.org, a message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
Do you want to serve the church as a lay parish minister? Do you possess the gifts and passion for full-time church ministry? Today, lay women and men are being called to join clergy and religious and serve the church as pastoral associates and directors of religious education. Perhaps you are one of those people. To serve, you need spiritual formation and academic training. And the Archdiocesan Together in God Service program provides you both. Qualified candidates receive partial tuition scholarships and pursue a master's degree in ministry at one of Chicago's Catholic theological schools. But Together in God's Service also provides retreats and prayer experiences to help you grow spiritually and deepen your love of God. If you want to explore a calling to lay ecclesial ministry, talk to your pastor and talk to us by calling 847-837-4552 or send an email to layministry@usml.edu.
Okay, this is Bob Gilligan, and we're back for the final 7 minutes of our show, or 6 minutes of our show. It's 9:53 a.m. on AM 820, the Catholic Community of Faith. Talking this morning with Tom Johnson from the Taxpayers Federation of Illinois. The phone number, if you want to make a quick phone call, is 312-751-1979. Tom, where does, I guess in the closing minutes or so, where do we go from here? It seems like we have a governor with a strong appetite for spending. We have a legislature with an appetite for spending as well. Yet the governor's taken off the table a major source of revenue that could help pay for that spending. Do deficits just continue to grow, or do we start making cuts, or do you think there's other sources of revenue that are out there that could be dreamt up?
Well, certainly, as we've all heard, that there's consideration being given for a significant expansion of gaming
yes.
in the state in order to support both the capital program and to a lesser extent the operation subsidy for the RTA.
Mm-hmm.
Our position as an organization is that we believe that there are opportunities for cost containment within the state budget, primarily in pension reform for state employees, health care reform as to what portion employees or retirees pay of their health care burden, as well as some reforms in managed care programs for the Medicaid program. And if you put
right.
some of those programs in place, although they would be not all welcomed by all participants in the program, we believe that close to $1 billion worth of savings could be achieved. Now, that's
a billion?
$1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. But from our perspective, the state budget is out of balance by somewhere between $4 and $4.5 billion a year. That's how much obligations we are deferring and not paying for that we should be paying for in the form of pensions funding, in form of health care retirement funding. So that would only cut about the deficit by about $1 billion out of the $4.5
uh-huh.
billion. Dollars. And that any support of any revenue enhancements, whether they be income tax, sales tax, or any other source, must be dedicated to ratcheting down that deficit before it's dedicated to new program expansion. We have had too much history in this state of using deferred obligations to expand government programs. We cannot continue that. That is just mortgaging the future of our state and putting that burden on future taxpayers, and that's wrong. If government, we should pay the current costs of government today. Be held responsible by the taxpayers for what we spend that money on and not hide it to deferred obligations.
In the next 2 or 3 minutes, is the problem getting worse now, or is it always been there, or are we just hearing about it more often because of the talk of 750 and gaming and all the other things?
I think it's getting worse because of what happened in the late 1990s. The stock market was doing very, very well.
Right. Okay.
It allowed us to capture investment gains for purposes of funding the pension program, and we got lulled into thinking that that would continue forever.
Yeah.
And it wasn't going to.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, when the stock market went down in 2000, that's when the problem really showed up in very vivid ways. And as a result of that, unless you can expect that we're going to have return of investment gains that we had in the decade mm-hmm. of the 90s, which we don't think exists, it really the problem really shows up much more clearly, and we need to get our hands around that problem and find a long-term solution to it. Now, obviously, the governor has proposed a couple of things, which we would, as an organization, are willing to consider. One is selling off the lottery or leasing the lottery and using those proceeds to put into the state pension programs. Another one is to issue some pension obligation bonds. We think that the issuance of pension obligation bonds should be considered because one of the things it does, it makes soft debt into hard debt, is the
right.
term we use.
Uh-huh.
We think hard debt forces us to be more accountable. When you just can defer obligations without ever having to pay down on that obligation, you'll never address it appropriately. And we think that putting hard debt out there, you cannot not pay the bondholders, shall we say. So we're looking at ways, and we are certainly willing to work with both the executive branch and the General Assembly in finding ways to assure that we meet those obligations in a responsible way.
What does leasing the lottery get? How much does that bring in?
Well, the lottery, some would estimate that it's worth as much as $10 billion. It generates oh. about $650 million a year in income. And the reason we would only consider it is if in fact today our pension funds earn about 8.5%, well, currently the lottery is only generating about 6.5% return on its value. Well, if you can take the proceeds and earn a higher interest rate on it,
sure,
then that will retire some of our past obligations faster than the current system would. That's why we would consider it. Obviously, you'd have to have a lot of protections in any type of plan to assure that the lottery would be run in a responsible way, and that's some of the things that have to be dealt with before we would sign on to a specific transaction.
Certainly the topic of a lot of discussion and conversation in the years ahead, because this is not going away with a $4 to $4.5 billion obligations that we're defining. Tom, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Your knowledge is incredible. You know this stuff off the top of your head, and I hope everybody enjoyed listening to Tom. Our thanks to him from the Taxpayers Federation and everybody who called in this morning. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We'll be back next month talking about a different topic, maybe not the budget for a change, as it relates to the Catholic presence in Springfield at the state capitol. Goodbye, everybody, and I'll talk to you next month.